WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Brian De Palma is the kind of director who evokes strong reactions. Pauline Kael has praised him for his seductive, virtuosic control of film craft, which enables him to express even what is in the unconscious. Others have condemned De Palma for excessive use of violence. De Palma's movies include Carrie, Dressed to Kill, The Untouchables, Scarface, Casualties of War, and Bonfire of the Vanities. His new film, Carlito's Way, stars Al Pacino as a former drug dealer just out of prison trying to start a new life. Sean Penn plays his coked-up lawyer. The film climaxes with a chase scene, which New York Times film critic Janet Maslin describes as a sequence Hitchcock might have envied. Pacino is being pursued up and down the stairs and escalators of New York's Grand Central Station. But that wasn't the initial idea for the scene.
Originally what happened was somebody threw a bomb in his car, and that's how he got hurt. And I felt to make this very cinematic, we needed sort of a 100-yard dash to the finish line. And in Manhattan, a 100-yard dash on the streets, on the subways, in the train stations. And a lot of things happened that I couldn't predict, like the first sequence was set up so that he would go down the stairs, the escalator in the World Trade Center. But unfortunately, the World Trade Center was bombed.
Instead of his car.
Exactly. So I had to completely find another way to do this, because there's a fantastic escalator in the World Trade Center that's immensely long. And I had this very complicated scene all mapped out, and then I had to sort of toss it out the window and come up with something. He was originally going to a plane, but I found airports are not too cinematically interesting. So when I started to wander around Grand Central Station, I could see I could make this all work in one location and have him get on a train instead of a plane.
If I understood this correctly, you were actually kind of in a shootout once yourself when you were like 22. And would you describe the story?
Oh, I guess college hijinks, I guess, basically. I was feeling very depressed and I had too much to drink, and I stole a motor scooter and ran a few lights, and a policeman pulled me over and I knocked him down and took off, and they ran me off and shot me.
Okay, so you knocked, how did you knock down the officer?
With my fists, as I recall.
So where were you shot?
The leg.
Now, was there a sensation that you experienced during that shootout that you've tried in after that to capture in films? Was it anything like?
Well, that's a sort of an interesting question, because, you know, we're constantly assailed with questions about violence in cinema and, you know, and what is this doing to the people that are watching it? And anybody that's been in any kind of truly violent situation, there's no analogy at all. Thing about movies are they're very much in control and very safe as you experience the situations. When you're in a violent situation, chaos, and you never know what's going to happen, and things happen so fast that, and it's a completely different sensation. There's absolutely no correlation. I'm always continually amazed by these questions about the what violence in cinema has to do with, you know, creating violence in the world that the people see when they go to the movie theaters, and there's no correlation at all.
Now, you spent the night in prison that night. Were you the only suburban kid in your area?
No, this happened on 11th Street. I was here in New York.
Oh, okay. Right.
It's a great experience to be in the tank. You have a healthy respect for law enforcement and what they're trying to do, and you never want to go back.
Strong visual images that stayed with you from that night in prison?
Loss of freedom, something that very few of us experience. You have to be arrested and thrown in the tank to really have a sense of You're just a number at the bottom of a list. And who you are and where you come from means nothing.
Brian De Palma is my guest. His new movie is Carlito's Way. I'd like to talk with you a little bit about your background and get into how you started being interested in movies. You were raised in Philadelphia. Your father was an orthopedic surgeon.
Yes.
So did he take you to operations?
Yes, I spent a few summers observing operations.
Now, some people get really squeamish when they see that, and other people are absolutely fascinated by it. What was your reaction?
I was kind of fascinated. I was, you know, very interested in science. I'm a science fair winner in the Franklin Institute for many years. And I had a very kind of scientific eye on it. I'm a very good person to have around in an accident. In the sense that, you know, blood and, you know, people being hurt doesn't faze me at all.
Unless you're getting shot.
Yes, unless... Unless it's me, but no, it was really quite interesting. It's nice. Followed him around on his rounds at Jefferson when I was, you know, 16, 17,
18. You know, I should tell you that many years ago, like in the mid-70s or something, I interviewed your brother, your scientist brother, physicist, I believe. So, you know, my show comes out of Philadelphia, and it was local then, and... I think he was living in Bucks County.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a theory of anti-gravity.
Mm-hmm.
Has he proven it yet?
He's still working on it. I haven't seen the thing lift off yet, so maybe in the future.
And am I remembering correctly that he had something to do with the invention of 3D glasses? Or
he
no, Polaroid lenses? No,
yes,
polarized
that's right.
Lenses.
That's right. He worked when he was working for the Polaroid company. He was... perfecting a 3D system.
Hmm. So did his interest in science have an influence on you?
Absolutely. He was very influential. He was an electrical engineer and a physicist. And he won a science fair, and then I won a science fair. It's a little sibling rivalry.
Okay, one other high school type question here. You were on all the prom committees, and you really don't seem like the type to be planning the sophomore and junior proms.
Well, I tried to fit in when I was in high school. You know, I was one of those people that could hang out with the jocks on the football team and also be on the chess team. I straddled both worlds.
So did all your prom experience come in handy when you were making Carrie?
Yes, 50s proms, indeed.
You knew all about it?
And a very important event in all our lives, going to the prom.
I have to say that one of my favorite shots of yours is in Carrie. And I haven't seen in the movie in a few years, so I might get this a little bit wrong. But when she's crowned queen of the prom right before they dump the bucket of blood on her, because
mm-hmm.
the whole thing's really they're just making fun of her. The camera has this like delirious swing around the room, circling around her.
The famous stuffing of the ballot box shot.
What do you mean stuffing of the ballot box?
It starts with
with the stuffing of the ballot when they're voting. Yeah,
when they take the real ballots and supplied them with the fixed ballots. It's a long crane shot. It's a, like a 180-degree crane shot that starts at Carrie's table and goes over to the side where you see them exchanging, taking out the ballots they had collected and dumping them on the floor and putting in the phony ballots. Then they walk over and give them to Betty Buckley, who's one of the teachers, and she's counting them. And then the camera goes by the steps, and you see Nancy Allen down there with John Travolta, giggling with glee, and then you follow the rope all the way up to the top that takes you over the bucket of blood, and then you zoom back to them at the table as they win the counting of the ballots and are elected by one vote.
Was that very hard to do?
Yes. Took all day to do it.
Well, how did you go from being very absorbed in science to being so absorbed in movies?
I left Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
I left the influence of my older brother, who was the physics genius, And I came to Columbia in New York and suddenly found that I was interested in other things besides science.
You were surprised to find that out?
Well, I always had these ideas, these stories. I knew a lot about cinematography because I was a kind of a science type, knew about how cameras worked. And at Columbia, they wouldn't let undergraduates direct plays, so the only thing left to me was to get into the movies. So I hawked all my science fair winnings and bought a Bolex.
Was there a point that you knew this was it, that filmmaking was it for you?
I just went from science to making movies and never looked back.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned that you hawked your science stuff for your first Bolex. So how were you changed by having a camera? Did you take it all over with you?
No. Basically, I had an idea for a movie. I was just going to be the cinematographer and write the script, but because I didn't vote for the director's varsity show, he abandoned me, and I had to sort of make the movie myself. So I started at 116th Street and Broadway in the subway tunnel with Pan dancing out, and that was the beginning.
Did you start watching films shot by shot?
Well, it's kind of interesting because you sort of get it right away. I mean, that's what's interesting about talking to other directors. I mean, you know, you sort of immediately, it's like, you know, it's kind of a rarefied group of people because only few directors can understand what other directors are doing. So you're kind of spend most of your time being misinterpreted or not interpreted at all. And only another director who has an acute sensibility like yourself can really sort of give you any kind of advice and suggestions about what you're doing with your work.
So who were the directors that you were able to communicate with?
Well, we had a whole group of them in the 70s, and we sort of kept close, but mostly, you know, Scorsese and Spielberg.
Mm-hmm. So you were all friends?
Mm-hmm. And still are.
Uh-huh. A lot of people have commented on the influence of Hitchcock on your work. What did you like about Hitchcock's vocabulary when you were starting to form your own?
We basically thought the same way. He thought in terms of images, and so did I. So it was like an immediate meeting of the minds. I immediately saw what he was doing and spent many years learning all the things that he had developed. And then I sort of started to develop a vocabulary of my own.
When you started making movies, did you have a vision of what you wanted to do differently? Not just from Hitchcock, but I mean differently as a young director starting out wanting to make his mark.
Not really. You just sort of evolve. You have certain subject material that interests you. I started making sort of, you know, hippie, anti-establishment movies.
Like Greetings and Hi, Mom.
Yes, and then I spend, you know, a decade making thrillers because I wanted to learn about, you know, visual storytelling. And then I sort of got interested in a variety of different subjects, mainly that were driven by character and emotion.
Okay, thrillers. Now, why do thrillers lend themselves to visual storytelling more than other genres might?
Because you don't have to spend a lot of time with character development. All those scenes where people sit down and look earnestly into each other's eyes that you see on your soap operas every day are not required in thrillers.
And there's a lot of just like little visual details that can...
They're all driven by visual ideas, you know, finding something, following somebody, chasing after somebody, looking, observing, which are all things that are purely cinematic. Very difficult to do. Most directors don't have a clue about what it is because most directors spend a lot of time just photographing scripts, which any clever Xerox machine can do. It doesn't take a lot of brains to put two people across from each other and have them talk to each other and take a two-shot. And then maybe an over-the-shoulder. And then another over-the-shoulder. Then they get up and walk out of the room. Directing.
I think Casualties of War is very much a character.
Yes, it is.
Oriented movie, and it's stunning.
Yes.
Visually. Would you choose a scene from there that you'd want to describe how you put it together to show not action, but to show what was happening inside somebody?
Well, I thought that the way that the you finally show that all the guys raped the girl was done in a very elegant way because it's done in a series of dissolves with the camera pulling back farther and farther and farther and farther. And then you realize, and then you cut to a close-up of Michael J. Fox, and you realize this is what he is watching. That's that big close-up with him with the rain hitting him on the face, and you realize he's been watching these four guys, you know, rape this girl. And there's no sort of physicality to the rape. It's kind of like a, I don't know, it's funereal is, I guess, the best way to describe it. And it's done a series of very slow dissolves. And then you're brought to, well, where are we watching this from? We're witnessing this as he's witnessing it. And then you cut to this incredible close-up of his face, and you see his frustration and impotence that he can't do anything, and his sorrow. And I felt that worked very effectively.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, my guest is Brian De Palma. His new movie is called Carlito's Way. It stars Al Pacino. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Brian De Palma is my guest. His new movie is called Carlito's Way. You once told Marcia Pally in an interview that you didn't like to see scary movies because being scared meant losing control, and being a director is about being the one in control. Was there a time when you felt you lost control as the director?
No, never. Oh, well, sometimes when you're doing an improvisation, and the like in Be Black Baby and Hi Mom, where you've basically worked out a kind of open-ended improvisation, and what you're trying to capture is a kind of, you know, documentary reality, and you basically just let the actors interact, and you just basically cover it like you would if you were a documentary filmmaker. And that did happen in Be Black Baby, and that was very exciting, where you don't know where it's going to explode. Mm-hmm. And it always surprises you, and that's what you catch on film, and it's as vivid to me now as it was then.
Is it true that you don't like to see scary films?
No.
No, you don't, or no, it's not true?
No, I don't like to see scary films. I don't like to be scared. Boo is something that I don't like.
And why not?
I'd rather be the puppet master than the puppet. I mean, who wouldn't?
As you became better known and started making more expensive movies and got deeper into the industry, did that bring more compromises you felt you had to make? Does one have to make more compromises as one gets deeper into the industry?
That is the age-old question.
I'm sorry.
I mean,
do we have to end the interview now? Was it really horrible?
The age-old question. I mean, I exposed myself to Julie Solomon for Bonfire of the Vanities precisely to answer these questions.
Yeah, well, you know, I really admire you for allowing her to, for opening up the door and allowing her to write that book. It's a fascinating book.
That's right, because you really try to show what happens as it happens and how these seemingly strange things occur on the screen that make no logical sense when you're looking at them for the first time.
Mm-hmm. And it's a book that really shows a lot of the frustrations in casting and shooting and budget that go on behind the scenes. Would you do
Yes.
it again? Would you let a journalist see everything that was involved in the making of a film again?
No, I think it's a one-time experience because a lot of people get their feelings hurt, and there's no such thing as Hollywood reporting, really, because you're basically just being served publicity material to reprocess out into the media. Nobody really tells you exactly what's going on, and I guess the closest thing you get is gossip.
Is that why you felt it was a good idea to let her do it, so that there'd be a real report on how
I thought the good idea, basically, because I would get questions about, well, do you have creative control over your casting, and how does the studio affect your work? And everybody I'd be talking to would seem like I was at an interview in 1930s while I was a contract director at MGM. It seemed to have no reality to the world I had been working in 20, 25 years. So that's why I let Julie aboard on Bonfire of the Vanity, so she could see what was going on. So maybe the journalists would read this book and maybe not ask these questions again. Now, to answer your question.
Yes.
Directors that have a certain track record, like myself, and you know, Spielberg, Scorsese, Coppola, I mean, a bunch I can name, Sidney Pollack, they have a certain power because of the quality of the films they've made and the successful films they've made. So consequently, you are able to do pretty much what you want to do. Are you influenced by agents, producers, studio heads, marketing meetings? Sure. Do you have the ultimate say about everything that goes on the screen? Yes. So it's a sort of a process that works on you, but you are completely responsible for all the decisions that go on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And and Bonfire of the Vanities is an excellent example in which I made a lot of decisions that when I think about it now, I probably would have done differently. But I made all those decisions myself.
Mm-hmm. You were talking before about how thrillers have a lot of opportunity for visual storytelling. Is it the same way with violence? Or do you find that violence lends itself to the kind of visual language you like to use?
Here we go again.
What did I do now?
I mean, here's a question I've answered for 25 years. The thing about violence in cinema is it's cinematic. That's why it appears in cinema. Now, of course, you can never defend violence because it's like defending wife beaters. I mean, you know, what can you say positively about violence? Violence is good. I like violence. You can't say any of these things without getting your head beaten to death. So consequently, I'll again say for the 9,000th time that violence is part of the palette of cinema. And that's why you see it in cinema. You can't see it on stage. Doesn't work too well. Doesn't work too well in music. Doesn't work too well in painting. Doesn't work too well in ballet. But on screen, it has a tremendous force. And it's specifically cinematic. So if you're making movies, you may move in the terrain of action and violence.
Film director Brian De Palma. His new movie is called Carlito's Way. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.